I'm Leonida Inge. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, fighting eviction. Global pandemics have a way of making everything feel unstable. Trying to keep a job and food on the table while staying COVID-free is difficult enough. But what happens when something gives and ends don't meet? Stephanie Wilder of Durham says she tested positive for COVID-19 and couldn't work, which meant she then wasn't able to pay July's rent, which meant facing the idea of not having a home to live in, and then facing off with her landlord.
I guess she wanna go in there and renovate because she have been renovating over there. But once she renovate, the rent goes up more money. So I think she wanna get in there and gut and renovate mine to get more money. But the way she's doing it to tell me to just get out and throw me to the curb is not right. It's not right.
Stephanie's struggle is like that of hundreds of thousands of people across North Carolina, folk who are at risk of eviction now that government moratoriums have expired. The CARES Act halted evictions for renters living in federally subsidized housing or properties with federally backed mortgages. That offered months of protection for renters during the pandemic, but that moratorium expired last month. Landlords were then able to issue 30-day eviction notices to tenants who didn't pay the rent. That 30-day period ended this week. Now, more than 700,000 people in the state are at risk of being evicted, according to a report by the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project.
I saw Trinity Properties up in town, told me the rent won't go down. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on?
During a demonstration outside the Durham County Courthouse earlier this week, a new group called Bull City Tenants United wants evictions to stop, or at least slow down the process. They say one way to do that is to close the courts until it's safe to attend a hearing. But some comfort for renters was announced this week. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper says $175 million will be available to help people struggling to pay for rent and utilities. The money will come from three grant programs tied to COVID-19 relief. These funds won't be available immediately, though, which doesn't do much for those worried about September's rent right around the corner.
Everyone has been talking about the coming eviction avalanche, the coming eviction tsunami.
Catherine Sabbath is a law professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She also heads the Civil Legal Assistance Clinic at UNC School of Law. The clinic represents tenants and helps educate people on their rights as renters.
I mean, the bottom line is the scope of the problem is enormous. The Aspen Institute just recently released data showing that more than 20 million people are at risk of eviction by the end of September. And if you just compare that to the foreclosure crisis, which was taken so seriously in hindsight, that crisis pales in comparison. We're talking about next month. I think it's important for listeners to understand that when we talk about millions being affected, I would say that the numbers are in fact higher than this if one understands how eviction affects not only individuals, but also families and communities. Social science research has demonstrated eviction creates cascading negative consequences for families and communities as well. So, you know, I think we often think of eviction as the result of unfortunate circumstances, which it certainly is, but even more so, it's often the cause of even worse outcomes, whether we're talking about credit damage, relocation to overcrowded or substandard conditions, a destabilization of employment, destabilization of education. I think people imagine those things to perhaps result in eviction, but it's the causal arrow goes the other way as well.
Those sound like some of the reasons why some people, they say, even are suffering disproportionately higher, I guess, when it comes to the coronavirus and COVID-19. You know, some of the, you know, it's your housing. It's where you work or allowed to work or no work at all. It's, you know, just poverty. That's where you are.
Right. I mean, it's clearly the case that if we're telling people they need to stay home, they need a home to stay in, and they need that home to be a safe one. They don't need to be doubling, tripling up with other people and that they otherwise wouldn't be choosing to bunk with. They don't need to be sleeping in their cars. They don't need to be in public shelters. That, you know, that's the opposite of what we need right now.
We know that, you know, earlier this week, Governor Roy Cooper made this announcement of this new grant, you know, $175 million to help people, I guess, catch up on their utilities and to avoid evictions, you know, during the pandemic. And, you know, that sounds like a lot of money and that it could be very helpful. But I wanted to ask your views on that because we know that money won't be available right away, you know, and it's rent time now.
I mean, I don't mean to understate that this is a good thing, right? I mean, there is relief here. I appreciate and I applaud Governor Cooper for doing what he can if this is what he can do. But number one, as you say, this isn't going to help next week. The rent is due next week. So, you know, it's unfortunate that this couldn't come sooner. It also doesn't seem to cover the scope of the problem. So, you know, and I'm not an expert in this particular area of this, but although it seems like a huge amount of money, the need is even greater because as we've been talking about, there are cascading problems here. There's cascading damage here. And so there's some measure of assistance, some stopping of some of the bleeding. It's a little too late and it's not going to stabilize people's situation going forward. Though it may, again, stop some immediate harm for some people.
And it's not a long-term solution, pretty much. It's not long-term. So that's why I'm wondering, you know, what is the most attainable long-term plan right now when you think of when people who are behind on their rent?
I think there are different levels of how long-term. And also sort of what do I think we should do versus what do I think is politically palatable and reason and likely to happen?
Cancel the rent. Is that what you're going to say? Cancel the rent.
So I will say something about the cancel the rent movement. I think there are different versions of what that means. And I think it's important for policymakers to understand that there are versions of that which really are not so radical, which is to say we're not talking about landlords not getting paid. We're talking about there being a subsidy for landlords. And one thing to think about when we worry that there's too much money being spent on housing is there's already money being spent on housing. It's a question of which housing. Are we protecting homeowners by giving them tax benefits? Or are we providing support to those who most need it to keep them housed, to keep them in safe and decent homes?
So, you know, if you do get an eviction notice, you know, what do you recommend? What does your clinic recommend one do if they get an eviction notice right now?
So if you get an eviction notice for non-payment of rent, I think what you do depends a lot on your relationship with your landlord. You know, is this a person that you know, or is this a large entity? And frankly, sometimes people think they have a relationship with a property manager, but that person really works for many, many, many levels of other people. And, you know, there's an entity above them and an entity above that entity. But, you know, the relationship you have with your landlord is important. And if you have either a good relationship or a neutral relationship, that is, nothing bad has happened, I would recommend reaching out to them and trying to negotiate. If the reason that the case is being brought is because you actually have not paid your rent, and I will just underscore that there are landlords who abuse the process, but if in fact you know perfectly well you did not pay your rent, I would reach out to the landlord and see if you can negotiate some sort of payment plan. You know, the landlord may be interested to know whether you have hope of paying in the future. That would be a reasonable inquiry on their part. Beside working with your landlord, you may be able to apply for financial assistance. You know, the social services offices of the county that you live in and a variety of organizations around the state do have funds. There are funds being provided to those organizations precisely for the purpose of helping you pay your rental arrears. So do not be shy to go and apply for that assistance, even if you are not someone who ever worked with that entity, that agency before.
Catherine Sabbath is a law professor at UNC Chapel Hill and heads the Civil Legal Assistance Clinic. One more note about Stephanie Wilder, the woman fighting eviction in Durham.
Okay, guys, I'm gonna start off, but please join in. We shall not be moved.
Stephanie found herself singing and chanting outside the county courthouse this week for the first time in her life. She says she never thought she would be doing this, out protesting in the streets.
No, I never. This just something that just happened to me in my life, and you know, standing behind and supporting other people with it. But no, I have never.
How does it feel?
I admire people that are, though.
I'm about to say, how does it feel speaking up now?
It just feels normal for me. It's just normal. Just telling my story and my truth. It just feels normal.
And normal is empowering. More on protests in a moment.
There are things we're taught not to discuss in polite company. But by avoiding so-called impolite conversations, we're missing out on the chance to make important connections with each other. I'm Anita Rao, and I'm on a personal journey to uncover just what happens when we open ourselves up to talking about taboo topics that affect our bodies and our brains. Find out on Embodied, a new podcast about sex, relationships, and your health from WUNC.
You would think a summer of covering our mouths and staying socially distant would be a more quiet time.
Don't shoot. Don't shoot.
But protests against police violence against Black bodies have kept the volume high. Some of the loudest protests this week have been in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That's where Jacob Blake, a Black man, was shot 7 times in the back by an officer. Blake remains hospitalized. The shooting sparked demonstrations across the country. But Kenosha tragically experienced more violence after a white 17-year-old used a rifle to shoot and kill 2 protesters and injure a third. Recent rallies for Black lives came up over and over again at this week's Republican National Convention.
In the strongest possible terms, the Republican Party condemns the rioting, looting, arson, and violence we have seen in Democrat-run cities all, like Kenosha, Minneapolis, Portland, Chicago, and New York, and many others, Democrat-run.
Black GOP voices joined the chorus of those who were rubbed the wrong way.
Greetings, my fellow Americans. I am Clarence Henderson.
Clarence Henderson was a student at North Carolina A&T State University in 1960, and he took part in the historic sit-in movement to integrate the Woolworth department store lunch counter in Greensboro. Henderson, a Black man, supports President Donald Trump because he says Trump loves America. But despite his history as an activist for Black liberation, Henderson does not support recent protests.
Our actions inspired similar protests throughout the South against racial injustice. And in the end, segregation was abolished, and our country moved a step closer to true equality for all. That's what actual peaceful protests can accomplish.
Henderson is 79 years old. He could be the grandfather or even great-grandfather of some of the young people taking it to the streets today. Yes, some of the tactics are different, but there are also a lot of similarities. Many quiet, peaceful protests of the 1960s also ended with demonstrators being beaten, tear gassed, jailed, or killed. Revolution, loud and quiet, community organizing and social change were swirling in the air during Henderson's era of activism. 57 years ago, thousands gathered for the March on Washington. That march in 1963 is remembered as a watershed moment for civil rights. Are we witnessing another now? That's it for this episode of Test It. I'm Leonita Inge. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.